What do you do when a child is waking up two or three times a night needing water or to be tucked in? So tucking a child in, you do once. And if the child gets up and says, Mommy, I need to be tucked in, teach them how to tuck themselves in. They shouldn't be waking you in the middle of the night to be tucked in. You have rights. You're a human being. If you're going to get up every time a child gets tucked in, you might not be able to have more than one child. I mean, how could you do that? There are things you just can't do. So you tuck a child in once, and sometimes you could tuck them in really well so that it stays all night, or you could teach them how to cover themselves, assuming, again, that the room isn't freezing cold. I'm not saying freeze the child, right? Assuming that it's normal, that they can sleep and that they could cover themselves normally, and sometimes it might mean getting them a slightly bigger blanket, you shouldn't be doing it more. And if you get your children used to pampering, they will take it. I had a student who was going into the army, and he came to me with a very serious question. He wasn't sure how he could go into the army, because his mother always cut his nails. He's 18 years old, and he's not sure what he's going to do. True story. If you pamper them, they will take it. Children take, take, take. That's their nature. And we have to teach them what we can give and what we can't give. And sometimes the answer is no, and that's the right answer. So you tuck a child in, and if they get up and they say, I can't sleep when my blanket's not comfortable, so you tell them, okay, so go back to bed. Cover yourself and whatever. They should not be waking their mother because they want to be tucked in bed. Child is thirsty, so get a sippy cup. There are cups that don't spill. You need the ones that say guaranteed no spill, a lot of ones do, right? But you get them a cup, and you leave it by the bed, and they can drink, and that's fine. But you shouldn't be running back and forth giving them a drink every time they're thirsty at night. They can drink. It's recommended. You should get them used to drinking water at night. Other stuff ruins their teeth. Let's review what we discussed tonight, and then we'll meet again. We're going to try to meet on Rosh Chodesh. Not on Rosh Chodesh, I'm saying the week of Rosh Chodesh. And again, I think it's a good idea that people send in questions. We'll try to balance between the questions people ask and the regular topics. We began by discussing the idea that we have to be appreciative of the Ribbono Shel Olam, of the Hornsteins, the Ben Davids, and my wife, and yeshar koach to every person that came out tonight. We spoke about my father's formula, the idea that chinuch is composed of, firstly, mazal, which can include tefillah, secondly, we give, and thirdly, we demand. And then we discussed the idea that there's no one formula that encapsulizes everything. You as a parent are going to have to figure out how to juggle which tools to use when. What you're trying to gain in chinuch are tools and perspective. Then we discussed the idea not to compare. The idea that you're different, your nature is different than someone else's, your marriage is different than someone else's, your children's temperament is different than someone else's, their environment, right, your sister with a big backyard, the generation is different, you can't compare your childhood to theirs, and the child's sensitivity might be different, and the time you have might be different. We said one of the first things we have to acquire in chinuch is understanding the age, because we have to understand age-appropriate chinuch. What's normal at this age? And here we said you can pay attention in the gina and the gan, how other children behave. You could talk to older people, you could talk to your parents, you could talk to other people, to other mothers. You want to see that other children behave the same way and realize that this is not chutzpah when a three-year-old says no, that there are certain things that are perfectly normal, and then you work with them. We said there are things that are variable and then things that are steady in chinuch. One is time, giving children time, and we discussed different tricks of trying to find ways to give the children quality time. We said not every issue that comes up is a chinuch issue. That doesn't mean we don't have to deal with it, but sometimes it's just not chinuch, it's just practical. When a child plays with matches, you need to practically end that. When a child is attracted by a stranger in a car, you need to resolve that. It's not about chinuch at that point, it's about reaching the resolution. We said in chinuch, you almost always have another opportunity. You don't have to feel pressured, because if you miss this one, if it's a real issue, it'll come up again. We said you have to remember the perspective, I'm their parent, I'm not their friend, and they're lucky to have me as a parent. One of the tools we use is we turn a blind eye. You yelled at your kid, and as you turned around, they stuck out their tongue at you. If it's plausible that you didn't see it, don't see it. Maybe you want to end the issue. Maybe it's not a good idea to have seen that and respond. It might be much better to move on. And Bezrat Hashem, they won't do it again. we said a tool that we use in chinuch is digression. Very often it's good to speak about something else, change the topic, and that way we can get the child to move forward and end the issue. We said we all need compliments, we all need love, touch, and patience. And finally, we said one of the ways we could work on a trait is by taking an experimental time, 20 minutes, or telling ourselves once a day, I will change this behavior. If you do it once a day for a week, then next week you do it twice a day. That's how you move forward in that. And then we went on to the specific questions. We spoke about chinuch for mitzvot, being when a child is ready for it. We spoke about the importance of not contradicting one another between us and our spouse, finding the common ground, and our arguments could be in the bedroom. We spoke about boys and girls, so long as things aren't an issue, we don't have to separate them so quickly. We can wait down the road. I would end with a point for you to ponder, because one of the issues which I did not get to, which I guess we're going to start with next time, is the issue of boundaries. Many parents are very against an education hitting a child. Rav Volbo was against hitting a child in our generation. You tell your child, don't go into the street, and now they do. You tell your child they can't play with glass, and they do. You tell your child they shouldn't play with matches, and they do. So it's one thing when you could hide all the matches. It's quite another when you discover that they're turning on the gas when you're asleep. How do you set boundaries? Meaning, this was a question that came from a few parents. It's a question I'm putting at you. But when we come to the next time we meet, I want you to think about what you're going to do when a child does run into the street. I was walking up Kiryat Moshe Street. A mother was fighting her way up with a carriage, and I hear a car screech to a halt. Her three-year-old, who was holding onto the carriage, within 1 second ran into the street and was almost hit by a car. The car stopped. Now, what she did next was yell at the kid for 10 minutes. Like, I could hear her all the way till Mechon Meir, she was yelling. And I don't think she accomplished anything. So now the question is, how are you going to set boundaries? Because the question is, where's the end game? Now what am I going to do? You don't want to be violent, you don't want to be cruel, but you do have to set certain boundaries. I'm saying that the child has to know they cannot cross that line. It's your responsibility as a parent. So I'm leaving you with that question, because I don't believe I'm going to answer it next time either. We'll discuss different approaches, different philosophies. I know that there are parents who are very, very much against hitting. I also think that hitting is very overrated. I don't think it's a good tool to use, almost ever. But that doesn't mean that your alternatives are going to be better in many ways. Are they going to be as effective, and are they going to be less cruel? Parents will sometimes give a very long punishment to a child, and you have to ask yourself, did I really do the child a favor? And if I tell the child they're grounded for a week, I tell the child they're going to stay in the room now for 2 days, what are you going to do so that the child understands this is more severe, you can't do this? And I'll end with an example that happened in the yeshuv a few weeks ago. A child took out a butcher knife against their sibling. So they were upset. They didn't understand what they were doing. But this happens. This is a normal child. This is not a crazy child. The parent called me up and asked what they're supposed to do. So I'm throwing the question to you. A lot of people asked this question. It came up in a lot of the different questions people asked. Setting boundaries. So I'm saying you have to set real boundaries. Well, you have to realize that kids will keep surprising you with new things. You have to decide how you're going to set those boundaries, and that's what we'll discuss with Zachin next time. Erev Tov.